there's nuances with that, but the key point to the whole thing is screening. Without prostate cancer screening, it is a disease you will not detect until it's spread.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Dr. Brandon Kramer, and Dr. Kramer is one of the top urologists in the country. With September being National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and with 1 in 8 men being diagnosed with prostate cancer during their lifetime, I figured it would be an incredible time to bring him on and let him inform us on prostate cancer, as well as teach us how to help prevent, detect, and treat it. This podcast will hit home for you or a loved one and could be the most important episode you ever listen to on this show. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, please go to Amazon and pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Dr. Kramer, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I want to honor Mark Asper, who's a former teammate of mine in Buffalo, one of my favorite people ever. He's of Mormon descent, still is a Mormon, but grew up Mormon, not a drinker. So during training camp, we'd always joke that Mark Asper, although a ton of fun, would bring the magic tricks when we go out. He's a great designated driver. We got really close during my time in Buffalo, got to spend a number of seasons together up here. He made this introduction, and for him, prostate cancer hits home with him, with his dad having had prostate cancer, and that's now the line of work he's in. He recommended Brandon as maybe the top guy in the country in this space. So first off, I want to thank you for your time. I know you're extremely busy, and this is an honor for you to come on the podcast.
All right. I'm excited to talk about it today.
All right. Well, let's dig in on a touch of your story first. So to my understanding, and I've known a few Harvard grads that have played in the NFL, some Ivy League football players.
There's a few more famous than me, for sure.
Well, maybe not making as big of an impact out there, but I want to know this. So I went to the University of Louisville, and at times, you know, practice got in the way of tests, homework, and whatnot. How hard is it at Harvard to maintain your GPA and maintain your studies and then also play football?
Well, you know, from a football perspective, I always like to say that we didn't have near as many fans that came and watched, but we still had to put in the same amount of hours.
Absolutely.
Harvard is a little different. So, for instance, we our off day back then was, instead of most teams doing Sundays, our off day was actually Monday, where we did not have organized team activities. So that was a requirement in order for us to be able to get to class and get the labs. And you know, they really worked around it. So it's just one of those deals that, you know, the education is, you still got to do it. And we went to class and I just thought it was normal. But it really, you got to do both. And we put in the hours and school. So we definitely had to do the school too.
Yeah, for sure. You didn't overlap with Ryan Fitzpatrick, did you?
He was, I think I remember him on his recruiting visit, which was my senior year. He was exactly 4 years behind me.
Gotcha.
So he came in when I was leaving.
Yeah, he's a really close friend of mine, snapped a ton of balls to him up in Buffalo. And, you know, anytime he plays a game, the funny thing is how long it'll take the color commentator to mention that Fitz went to Harvard. You know,
yeah, he had a great career.
Yeah, absolutely. And he'll do well in media now. He's obviously bright, a Harvard grad, but he's also fun enough, showed his personality towards the later part of his career when he got really comfortable in front of the camera and the microphone. So he'll have a successful transition as well. He's got 7 kids to manage as well. So he'll have a full plate in retirement. But
I still remember the picture of him being shirtless in Buffalo a year or two ago.
Yeah, for our playoff game last year. And he was a recent guest on the podcast. We talked about that. I said, never in history has there been a quarterback who started the season for another team as their starting quarterback, was still under contract, now he was injured, and attended a playoff game for another team, much less take the shirt off. I'm talking even just attending the game, unless maybe it was a Manning where his brother was playing. So just really cool dude, really special. People in Buffalo love him. And and it's obvious why. But let's dig in on the nuts and bolts of this podcast, what we want to accomplish. And I mentioned that September is National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month in the intro. Let's start off this way. What is the prostate and what does it do? What's its function?
That's a great question. A lot of people don't understand. So I always like to tell patients that when you're younger and you're having kids, right, the prostate is an organ that gives extra fluid to the sperm to help them get where they need to go to make babies. So as we get older, the thing is, technically, we really don't need a prostate. Now, we don't just remove them for the fun of it. But as we get older, the prostate can do two things. It can grow and get enlarged. And when that happens, we tend to have more problems going to the bathroom because the urine tube that we pee out of runs right through the middle of the prostate gland. And that could be treated. That's called BPH. The second thing, the prostate that can have happened to it is that you can develop prostate cancer in it. And prostate cancer is the leading cancer in men. It affects about 270,000 men in the United States every year. But we can talk a little bit later about detection and screening, and prostate cancer can be very treatable and very curable as long as we catch it at the right time.
What's the drawback of just removing it then?
When we remove the prostate for cancer, okay, there's surgeries we can do on the prostate for an enlargement of the prostate. But when we remove the prostate for cancer, there's potential for small side effects. The biggest one being erectile dysfunction. The nerves that that control the erections run right on the backside of the prostate, and those can be injured during surgery as a known side effect. And then also a period of urinary leakage where we leak with coughing and sneezing and movement.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense then. Yeah, when you said it can be removed, I was thinking, well, once you get over 50...
And, you know, the recovery is really great with it. We do it robotically now. It's poke hole surgery. I did a gentleman yesterday, and he's going home today already. So wow. We tend to recover really well from it. But, you know, like anything, I always tell people it's still major surgery.
Yeah. Besides the regular screenings, what would be the symptoms that would lead someone to say, I need to get a prostate screen immediately?
Yeah, so that's the crazy thing with prostate cancer is that before we invented screening in the early 1980s, there was really no way to detect the cancer until it became metastatic or it had spread throughout the body. And so once we started, when the PSA test, the screening test, so the screening test for prostate cancer is a blood test, a PSA test. So all it is a blood draw and typically a rectal exam to feel the prostate gland. That has dropped the death rate from prostate cancer by over 50%.
Wow.
Now, there was a period of time where we probably over-screened people, but what we've learned over the last 20 or 30 years is that some prostate cancers are more aggressive than other prostate cancers. And so I have a lot of guys that get diagnosed nowadays, and they're actually just on what we call active surveillance, meaning we know there's something there, but we just watch it closely. And then for guys that need treated, we typically, the main treatments for prostate cancer are either radiation to the prostate gland, which is external beam, so nothing touches you, or surgery to the prostate gland. And there's nuances with that, but the key point to the whole thing is screening. Without prostate cancer screening, it is a disease you will not detect until it's spread.
Gotcha. Yeah. So vitally important that you get these screens. At what age do you recommend they start getting screened?
So these guidelines have changed throughout the years. And there was a period of time, like I said, where we thought we were over-screening people. If you have a family history, which is a first degree relative with prostate cancer, we recommend a baseline screening in the 40s, in the age of the 40s. And then it's really a discussion with your doctor. Prostate cancer is a disease that affects more men as we age. But like we said, you know, if you get prostate cancer at the age of 80, you probably don't need to really do anything about it because the odds that it would grow and spread over 10 years is almost zero. With that being said, if you get prostate cancer at the age of 45, you know, that's something we really need to be able to treat and take care of so we save people's lives.
And how often would these screens need to take place if it's not that aggressive and it's not growing that fast? Is once a year enough?
Yeah. So most men do their screening once a year. Now, if you're low risk and your baseline screening is normal, then you can have a discussion. It's called like shared decision-making, essentially, a discussion with your doctor. Do we want to continue testing this every year? Do we want to do it every couple years? But I always tell patients the testing is really not aggressive, right? It's a blood draw and an exam. The question is, what do you do with those results? And that's where with prostate cancer, it's really an art form. There's no black and white. And every man, we kind of have to treat individually based off of their risk factors and symptoms and their risk for prostate cancer and their PSA levels and so on and so forth. I like to tell guys, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care what your PSA value is, right? Because some guys run high, some guys run lower. What I really care about is it related to prostate cancer or not?
Right, right. And if someone is diagnosed, you mentioned either radiation or prostate surgery, what determines which route you take there?
Typically, based off of risk and benefits, when we're a lot younger, in our 40s and 50s, most men will opt for surgery because although there is some recovery, there's a much less chance of long-term side effects 20 or 30 years down the road. When we get older, a lot of men tend to choose radiation because of the side effects of surgery. Both have great outcomes when it comes to cancer cure. And a lot of people nowadays, we actually do active surveillance on. So if we identify a low-risk prostate cancer, we can actively follow that patient, making sure the cancer doesn't become more aggressive, right? But then avoid any treatments because of the, although the side effects are very minor nowadays, there's still a potential for side effects. So it's kind of weighing that pendulum of do we want to treat versus do we want to watch this very closely?
Yeah, that makes sense. And all right. So talking kind of in general on cancer, but prostate cancer in specific here, besides your obvious drinking, smoking, toxic substances you're constantly subjected to, when you're looking at cancer in general, what type of lifestyle and diet recommendations would you give to an individual that says, I want to live to be in my hundreds and I want to, and you know, God can do it. I'm a man of faith. I believe your tomorrow is never promised. I get that. But if you're trying to be smart about your diet and lifestyle choices, what are you recommending to folks?
Yeah. So I always like to tell patients, whatever's heart healthy is probably prostate healthy. Meaning that, you know, we don't want to eat tons of processed foods and all these other things. And we want, you know, the stuff that makes you heart healthy, low salt diet, stuff like that, probably makes just your body healthy. As I'm sure you know, the American diet is a lot of things that we probably shouldn't be eating. But when guys talk to me about that, just say, you know, try to eat simply, eat healthy. My general rule that I tell people is if you're eating out 6-7 times a week, you're probably taking in stuff you don't want to. There's no specific things for the prostate that we know of that definitely prevents or causes, if that makes sense. But yeah, whatever's heart healthy is prostate healthy.
There's been so much. If you get on social media nowadays, you can find support for any fad diet out there. And so for those listening, they may be confused by what exactly you mean by a healthy diet. Like, have you bought into or researched maybe a ketogenic diet, even the carnivore diet, or, you know, throughout time, the Mediterranean diet has been associated with blue zones, the people living the longest throughout the world.
Sure, sure.
What are you recommending most? And do you have any thoughts on some of those newer?
Well, yeah. So personal experience, as I'm getting older and not exercising as much, and I didn't want to get back to my football playing weight from a couple years ago, I did do the keto diet for a while. And if you do it, you know, or any of those diets, really, the key is just, in my opinion, is kind of everything in moderation, right? If you do things in moderation, you're probably going to be healthier down the road. And for instance, keto diet, you could eat the bad parts, but there's a lot of really healthy things that you can eat that are on the keto diet, you know, peppers, hummus, carrots, types of things that aren't high in carbs. So I think all of those things potentially work. The key over time is just to do things in moderation and try not to, you know, I'm going to do it for a month and then I'm going to go back to my bad habits. I think that's the key. It's easy to fall off the bandwagon when it comes to those things.
How much did you play at when you were at Harvard?
I was somewhere, my senior year, somewhere between 255 and 260. And then I always like to joke when I got married, like, what was that? 7-8 years later, I was down to like 212. But now I'm probably 225, 230.
Well, yeah. And you didn't get it all the way back. Yeah. I
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I always kind of, especially having so many high achievers, these performance coaches on the podcast, at times I'm convicted whenever I have a cheat meal or let myself have too big of a weekend or a family vacation and eat like crap for a week. And then my wife will kindly remind me, like, you're not a fitness model. Like, you do not, you can splurge a little bit, but I will be convicted by some of those guys from time to time. In kind of along those same diet and lifestyle choices, have you seen fasting to be beneficial for either the help of prevention of cancer, maybe through the autophagy process, the cleansing of the dead cells, or even preventing cancer from spreading, because the cancer is living off of something. So if you deprive it, essentially you could kill it. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a really, it's a really cool theory. I think it's tougher to kind of prove those things in real practice and actually do the studies and say, does it work? Especially for what I deal with is more of just the urinary system cancers, for instance, kidney cancer, prostate cancer, bladder cancer. I think there's potentially some stuff in that. But it's tough to know. Cause like I said, we haven't been able to do the studies. To be honest, I end up doing a partial fasting diet on most days. Cause I get into the office and I work straight through until I finish. And I usually don't stop for lunch and most of the time don't eat breakfast. And then I get home and eat. So, I think I would say my baseline diet, just from my work schedule and my kid's schedule, because we're usually going to something at night, practice or something like that. I do a lot of the fasting diet, but as far as cancer goes, there's definitely some strong things that suggest that may be beneficial, but it's just kind of too early to tell.
Yeah, that makes sense. And wasn't there a Nobel Prize recently on someone through their research in fasting, or am I making that up?
I don't know that answer. We'll have to Google that after the show.
Okay. This is where we need that third party producer on the line with us looking it up.
I need my earpiece and then they can tell me.
Yeah. One day when we get that Joe Rogan budget, we'll make sure, make sure that's on there. All right. So you're a football guy. You play college football. You're living in the Kansas City area. What's your prediction for the Chiefs this year? And no, we're not going to talk about the divisional round game last year against the Bills.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about that. I still don't understand why you guys were in a deep cover two, it looked like.
I know it.
The funny thing is before that that pass to Kelce was thrown, I always like looking formations, right? So I played tight end in college. Well, actually, my freshman year, I played defensive end. I was on the scout team. And I got to go up against Matt Burke in practice every single day.
Nice.
Because he played tackle in college. And I just remember one time, I got around him and sacked the quarterback and I thought I was doing pretty hot with it and everything else. And then when they moved me to tight end my sophomore year, and I started learning the offensive side of the schematic and stuff, I realized it was just a blown pass protection coverage. I really didn't beat him.
That makes sense.
But football, it's been great to me. Refresh your question again one more time.
Yeah, what's your prediction for the Chiefs this year?
Oh, the Chiefs.
See, Tyreek Hill moves on. There's some new bodies over there.
I'll always say in the NFL, as a player, and you're a player, and I've known some players in the NFL, if you can get paid, right?
Sure.
The NFL teams are running a business like I'm running a business. And as an employee, if you have a great thing, do it. I think the Chiefs, had to let him go for the fact that, there's salary caps and you decide who you're going to pay, but man, he is an amazing talent. It's tough with the Chiefs, strength of schedule is you finish first in your division, year after year, you have a tough strength of schedule. But I wouldn't bet against them. I still think we're going to win our division. I don't know if we'll make the wild card or be able to host a home game. I'm pretty used to, as a fan with season tickets, going to the AFC championship game. So I don't know if a playoff game is worth it for me unless it's an AFC championship game as a joke.
Just getting spoiled. I'm
getting really spoiled, but we went through a lot of lean years where I could hardly give away my tickets. So it's just an exciting time here in Kansas City. They're fun to watch. But as I'm sure you know much better than me, the NFL is a lot of a chess match. And so most of these games come down to one possession or a couple plays.
It's like a chess match, but when you have a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen, which I never played with that caliber of quarterback in when I was with the Bills, I played in the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports. It's like having your queen playing against an opponent whose queen's eliminated. It just makes it a lot easier when you have a guy that a chess piece that can move in any direction. And then you can take some risks with your other pieces when you have that queen there. When you have a guy like Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, an Aaron Rodgers, a Tom Brady, and shoot, nowadays there's so many more with Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray. There's a lot of top-end talent at quarterback, which makes it a lot of fun, and a lot of these guys are young, so the game will be fun for a long time, and it's in great hands. But it's so – like with the Chiefs in particular, like they have such a tough division. Everybody's loading up in the AFC West, but when you still have Patrick Mahomes and you have all that stability with Bieniemy back as offensive coordinator, Andy Reid back again, which I love Andy Reid. I got to play for him at the Pro Bowl, and just an incredible person and huge fan of his. So all that being said, I'm hoping it's Chiefs-Bills again, because it will only feel right if the Bills can get over the Chiefs, considering they eliminated them the last 2 years from the playoffs. But that being said, I hope the game's in Buffalo, because it makes a big difference. I got to play in Kansas City a number of times throughout my career, and I do have an appreciation for Kansas City, because when you pull in, the tailgate is old school packed. You got all the lots around the stadium. It reminds me a lot of Buffalo. And then you got the old school stadium. You don't have one of these new corporate filled stadiums that kind of has a stale atmosphere. Arrowhead is a ton of fun to play at, and I don't care if it's a Sunday at 1 or if it was the divisional round that I was calling the game for in the stadium last year. It's an incredible atmosphere and a ton of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I took my kids to the preseason game that they had last week. And when you speak about Mahomes, we scored touchdowns on our first two drives before the starters went out. But there were two third down throws that would have killed the drive, where literally he scrambled and threw something essentially behind his back, not looking, on the run and nailed the receiver. Otherwise the drive would have been gone. So, you know, when you have a talent like that to keep things alive, I mean, that's the difference between punting and being up 14-0.
So, you know, from playing football at a high enough level that it is an absolute sin for a quarterback. It gets you fired for a quarterback if you're rolling out to the right or the left and throw back across your body to the middle of the field, because in the old days, that was an interception like 80% of the time. And you're throwing back across the field. Generally, everyone's rolling out in a similar direction. Now you're looking at a pick six generally too. That being said, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and really Rodgers does it and maybe did it before them, they break the mold. They have so much speed and arm strength and so much creativity that they do it all the time and get away with it. I'm calling the games and I'm like, I don't think you guys understand. I've sat in so many offensive meetings where quarterbacks get cussed out for a decision like that. But now the sticks are moving and they're going to wind up with another 7 points here.
Yeah, you know, like in college, you know, the scramble drill is that you run towards the side the quarterback's rolling. You know, yes. You've got to get to the open area. Now, you know, it's just with these amazing athletes, these quarterbacks, it's just find an open area and they'll probably get you the ball.
Absolutely. All right, I got a couple hot fire questions for you at the end of here, and I'll be respectful of your time. Number one, what's your favorite book?
I do a lot of audiobooks now because I commute about 30 minutes or so to work. But two recent ones I've read in the last year are both by the same author, Ron Chernow. I like listening to a lot of history books. So he wrote the biography of Hamilton, which they based the musical on. And also he wrote one on Grant, Ulysses Grant. And it's just really interesting, you know, when we look at history of, you know, when our country was founded, or just history in general, of really how dedicated and smart these people were and the work ethic they had, you know, where they would self-school themselves for 12 or 14 hours a day to learn foreign languages and economics and you name it. And it's really interesting of how they set up, you know, the United States for the success that we've been able to have as a country, but also, you know, the drive to be able to discipline yourself to do that is really amazing.
Absolutely. It's amazing to me too, that they would do all that. Plus most U.S. presidents until recently served in the military as well. So they have the military background. They have that work ethic. They have this extreme intelligence, and it makes them the perfect leader of a country. And that's not a shot at anybody recently. Times have just changed, but you go through the political system, become president, as opposed to transition out of military and then be identified as an incredible leader that can lead our country.
Sure. Yeah. It's just all the things they were able to think of, like in, you know, 200 and some years, we haven't significantly changed it. It's just amazing that it all came from a group of a small cohort of people.
Absolutely. I like asking this question to every podcast guest, but I enjoy it with someone with a science background. What role does your faith play in your life?
That's a great question. So I'm Catholic. My kids are Catholic. They go to Catholic school. But I really look at, you know, religion as kind of, you know, what Pope Francis says, you know, who am I to judge? You know, my goal as a person is to, you know, treat everybody with respect, to realize, although it was a ton of hard work and a lot of years where, you know, you go through medical school and training where you're not really making any money at all, and you have loans and everything else, but I'm blessed. Right. I'm in a position of life now where I don't have to think about things. And so I really look at like the social aspect of stuff, like as a Christian, as a Catholic, I want to, you know, help the less fortunate. I want to live in a place without war, without strife, and just know that, you know, on this earth, at the end of the day, when you're at the gates and being judged, right, did you lead a life where you were respectful and you treated people with respect and kind of followed those things? And that's what I really kind of live my life on. That's what I want to instill in my kids is understand that you're blessed and you know, you're in a unique situation compared to the world. It's really easy to just focus in your little area, right? And not understand what's going on everywhere else. And just, you know, trust in God that I want to be able to give back. And I want to do that, for people that aren't near as fortunate as I am. And that's kind of my tenet faith in religion.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Generosity is one of our core values as well. You know, as a family, as an individual, we want to be known as being generous. I heard that throughout what you said. So, I truly appreciate that. What's your favorite restaurant? I'll say this, you're in Kansas City. So hopefully you give us the best barbecue recommendation for Kansas City for my next time there.
I don't know if you've ever had this. I want to go out on a limb and say 98% of the time I eat at home. My wife is literally a gourmet cook. She can make anything from scratch. She does a wide variety of food when it comes to that. So I have to give her a big shout out. I'm spoiled when it comes to that. And just the stuff she makes is amazing. But when it comes to restaurants, I got to go through my top barbecue list in Kansas City. So, you know, when you're here during the game, you can maybe hit one of them up this year.
Yep.
Joe's Barbecue is pretty world famous. I think they have the best ribs and they have this sandwich called a Z-Man. I get it with pulled pork. So it's a bun, pulled pork. It's provolone cheese, two onion rings, and you can't beat it. Q39 is a newer barbecue restaurant.
Been there.
Yep. There's the original one on 39th. There's one out where I live now. They have great burn-ins. And then when it comes to sides, like the cheesy corn and beans, you can't go wrong with Jack Stack.
Yep. Been there too.
Those are my top three when it comes to Kansas City.
Yeah, so I've been to 2 out of 3. I got to check out Joe's though. That's
yeah, Joe's. Awesome. If you you can probably call ahead and get some type of VIP thing. But the original one is actually in a gas station, and that's where they started. But they have three or four other ones in town now. But yeah, get a thing of ribs and get a pork Z-Man.
Will do. Will do. All right, last one for me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for Brandon Kramer? What's coming down the line for you?
Well, you know, I'm in my 40s now. I got three young kids, 10, 8, and 7. So it's kind of just watching them grow up and seeing, you know, how they grow into adults and, you know, what they're going to do as they get older and focus on and all those types of things. And from a practice perspective, my group's really large. KCUC is the name of my group. We have 32 urologists and a couple radiation oncologists and a medical oncologist here in Kansas City. And over the last 10 or 12 years, we've about doubled in size. And so it's just from a business perspective, from a doctor perspective, continuing to grow, continue to stay on the cutting edge, and really just continuing to give great quality care to patients, because that's really kind of our mission. And then on a personal level, it's just starting to enjoy all the things in life, you know, and give back and see the kids grow and teach them to be, you know, I was always told, like, you know, my money's not your money, you know. I want my kids to grow up and make it on their own, and I want them to have really successful lives.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's a mission of ours too, to teach that work ethic, even though my kids are gonna grow up in a different economic, you know, threshold than I did, sure, my wife did, but
same for me.
Exactly. So there's the balance there. And I appreciate that mission that you and your practice are on, and the quality care, and truly trying to do what's best for your patients. And I appreciate you taking the time out of a busy schedule that's full of helping others, but hopefully the impact from this podcast makes a tremendous impact on so many others. I mentioned in the intro, you will be directly affected, or a loved one will be affected by prostate cancer. 1 in 8 men will be affected by this. So you will know someone affected by prostate cancer. Share this episode with them, share the knowledge you learned from it, and Dr. Kramer. And I can't thank you enough for your time here, brother.
I appreciate it. I had a great time. We'll see you in Kansas City during the regular season game this year.
Sounds great. Thanks. Thanks for tuning into this episode, presented as always by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.